The CDC came out with a statement that says gadolinium toxicity has the potential to cause disease in humans, and even in small amounts may be associated with significant morbidity and mortality. The main way it's found in the human body is because a radiologist put it there. So when you go in for imaging, then it's injected into the bloodstream, and we call it glow in the dark. It makes the body glow in the dark so that they can see everything that's going on inside you, in the vascular and the bloodstream and the, you know, the muscles and the bones and everything. So it just kind of helps the radiologist read the report.
Debbie, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is exciting to talk about.
Yes,
topic close to my heart.
Yes, I've been wanting to talk about gadolinium or have somebody on the show for so long, but there's not many people that know about gadolinium or gadolinium toxicity or how to address it. I mean, it's just really difficult. It was very difficult to find you. I think you found me. Actually,
I know I did find you. Yes. I saw your movie that you guys helped produce, and I'm just a fan of that whole thing. And yeah, anything we can do to start the open dialogue about heavy metals and how they're impacting our world and our bodies.
Yes. Yeah. And so let's talk about what you are an expert in, which is gadolinium. So what is gadolinium and what do people need to know about it?
Gadolinium is a toxic rare earth metal. It's number 64 on the element chart. It's a lanthanide. It's never found in the human body unless, especially at toxic levels. It's starting to be found in the human body more and more because it's in the water. So because it's in the water, there was a few years ago, they tested water-based cola products in six restaurants in Germany, and they found gadolinium in all of it. So the main way it's found in the human body is because a radiologist put it there. So when you go in for imaging, then it's injected into the bloodstream, and we call it glow in the dark. It makes the body glow in the dark so that they can see everything that's going on inside you, in the vascular and the bloodstream and the, you know, the muscles and the bones and everything. So it just kind of helps the radiologist read the report.
So that's great for the doctor to be able to see your image. But I think what many people don't realize is some of that gadolinium stays inside of you. And so depending on what type of scan that you're getting, and we'll talk about that in a minute, you have to be, you know, I'm trying to make people informed about these contrasting agents that contain this metal gadolinium, and some of that stays inside of you. So I think, you know, I want to bring some kind of information to you guys about what you may be getting into before you get certain types of medical scans, because some people get really debilitating health issues. They're not able to work any longer. They have pain syndromes. Let's talk a little bit about that, like what type of symptoms people would have if they are in fact suffering from symptoms of gadolinium toxicity.
There is a list, and we have that available, and we can make the links available to you. But yes, gadolinium, the industry has said back in 2018, they released a letter to the doctors, and the manufacturers all signed it. All the manufacturers of the brands signed it, and there was eight brands at the time, Linear and Macro, so there's two different kinds. And they signed a letter saying, yes, we now realize that some is retained in everyone who's injected, and it's found in the brain, the bones, the tissue, and the organs, right? So that's an aha moment. And really before that, we hadn't seen too much. The main thing was NSF, which is nephrogenic systemic fibrosis, which is related to the liver or the kidneys, kidney failure. And before that, we really didn't have a lot. But now when they came out with that letter, and just recently, I mean, I might just read one really quick statement from the CDC. The CDC came out with a statement that says, gadolinium toxicity has the potential to cause disease in humans, and even in small amounts may be associated with significant morbidity and mortality. And that's just one sentence in their statement that they released, right, when they released the ICD billing codes. And ICD billing codes really are going to help us, because now that we have retention and we have a large group that's growing group, a growing community of people who are like, I've had impact, I've had adverse reactions, I don't know what's going on, help me, help me, help me, right? And doctors don't know, and they can't figure it out, and they don't have a cure, they don't have an antidote. And science and medicine evolve, right? We have new things that come out, and then we learn as we go, and that's just how we do things, right? So I think the top five that we focus on and we see in the group is brain fog and cognitive things. And that was the first thing that happened to me. So my first injection, I got terrible dementia. I couldn't even drive to the dog park, anything. Couldn't drive to work, all kinds of things. And you're like, what's going on? And then So then you go to the doctor and they say, well, let's look and see if you have Alzheimer's. So then they inject you with a second injection and then just symptoms just build. So cognitive, brain fog, those are one thing. Neuropathy is a huge one. And I know neuropathies goes across all kinds of diseases, right? Diabetics have neuropathy. Parkinson's people have neuropathy. Lots of people have neuropathy. But what is causing that neuropathy and why is it so bad? And we see that as a big one in the gadolinium community. Burning, a real deep burning. It's a bone pain burning. It's also a skin burning. It's a calcium channel blocker. So it gets into the bone and that deep bone pain can be debilitating. People don't sleep. I mean, people who come into the GAD group, you know, we tell them this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So, you know, get used to it. You have a long way to go to like figure it out and it's going to take some time, right? But we encourage detoxing, we encourage chelation, all those things. Then bone pain and then twitching. So a lot of twitching, fasciolations, I think is what they call it for the medical term, but that's a big one. And then people have dental problems. You see their teeth deteriorating all of a sudden and they're like, what's going on, right? And then they start to get autoimmune diseases and they're like, why do I sudden is my thyroid not working? Or why did I get lupus? Or why do I have mast cell activation syndrome? Or so we just see a host of things. And as the medical community wants to learn more, they're like also puzzled by it, right? I think the big thing, if I would say anything about gadolinium, is the human experience is very different from the scientific outcome, right? Because they can test with all these things with their tools and all this stuff. But when you talk to humans, you get a very different story than what comes out of science. So, but we're learning together and we hope that the community really would just like to have open dialogue. We'd like to have open dialogue and encourage us to work together and partner together to figure this out.
There are so many other symptoms as well. They could be anything. And I think when people go into their physicians, they're presenting with pain. They're not looking at heavy metal toxicity, certainly not gadolinium toxicity.
And they're never discussed.
Never.
Mm-mm. And that is kind of informed consent is a big thing, right? Informed consent, truth, transparency. I would always encourage people, if you're going to have any kind of medical thing, if it's a drug or whatever, ask for a copy of the medication guide. Ask for the name of the drug. Get on the FDA website. They put all the medication guides out there. Read the medication guide. Read the list of symptoms. Ask yourself, if I were to have an adverse reaction, are the trade-offs something I would be willing to live with compared to what I'm facing? It does require, you know, it's your body, has to be your decision, but education is key. So read the medication guides and get educated.
And I think the problem, even with informed consent, is people think those things aren't probably going to happen to me. You know, and they just want to go through with their procedure, whatever they're doing, whatever the doctor says. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to take responsibility or ownership in it. They just want to defer to the authority. And so I think people just, I guess, don't think those things would happen to them, even if they read the medical insert, but that's another conversation. So let's talk about, like, people have dermal changes. They can have tightness, thickening, discoloration of their skin, fascia tightening. You mentioned they can have a lot of pain, head pain, deep bone pain, you know, vision changes, lack of sleep.
And you read tons and tons of research, right? And they always stop short of just saying, you know, they're like, more research is needed. So yeah, but we see all those things. We see thickening of the skin, we see muscle loss, we see gut problems, right? So the tie to your stomach and your gut health is real. When people have to start taking that, I mean, metals feed on sugar, right? They love sugar. And then there's parasites and those things, it's all connected, and you can't disconnect them. They're all connected, right? So it's all connected, and it all matters how we look at this. It's a holistic thing. And I think corporate medicine, not to bash corporate medicine, but when we move to corporate specialty medicine, everyone has a specialty and they're like, that's not my wheelhouse. And so we don't get a collective image anymore of what's going on. And so one doctor prescribes the imaging. Another doctor does it. The two don't talk. The patient never talks to the radiologist. They talk to their doctor. They go back to their doctor. Their doctor may never, ever connect the dots that, oh, we injected you with the heavy metal. Maybe that's why you have some new symptoms. And when patients complain about that, then they're like, no, that's not right. We don't see that. But they do see it. I mean, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And also people can get cardiovascular issues, hormonal changes, chronic fatigue, difficulty with body temperature regulation, inability to sweat, tinnitus, dizziness, edema, fatty liver, balance problems, like just a whole host of symptoms that really could be anything. When you present at your doctor with any or all of these symptoms, you know, good luck figuring out what's going on with you.
Right. And I think you do want to keep a list. You, as the patient, you have to be the advocate because your doctor's busy. They're seeing lots of people. They're not, you know, they barely have time to read your test results before you come in, if they even have time. And so you have to be that advocate. And you're right. So the list of symptoms is huge, right? And it's disconcerting because then people, all of a sudden, their red blood cells are off, or they have a cytokine storm, you know, they get testing for cytokines and all the cytokines are off and they're like, what's going on here? And it takes a while to get diagnoses. Mast cell is huge in that community. And that's just a sensitivity, right? That's a sensitivity to a lot of different things. A perfume can set it off, a smell, carpets, any kind of odors can set off mast cell. And so you see a lot of that in people. The skin thing is really concerning because your skin gets thick, it feels leathery, it can change color. And it used to be, well, that was considered NSF, which is nephrogenic systemic fibrosis. But now we say, no, that's gadolinium iatrogenic fibrosis. And so we see fibrosis in patients who have functioning kidneys. So it's not limited to just people who have bad kidneys.
Yeah. And then how did you get started with this work? So you have a Facebook group. Can you tell us what that is for gadolinium advocacy and for people that are injured, correct?
Yeah, there's all kinds of Facebook groups. Probably the largest Facebook group is the one that I'm involved in, and I'm an admin in there, but it's run by admins, all volunteers, all patients of either they've had gadolinium or they have children that may have had gadolinium. And so they've become advocates and they've wanted to learn more and be available. And our patient group's going to reach around 8,000 here shortly, probably by the end of the month. So we're seeing about 300 a month join the group. And that's been ongoing. When I first joined, there was about 1,200 people. Marcy Jacobs was one of the original Facebook people, and she started a group. I think that group is still in existence, but probably not at the numbers that we have in our group. There's groups in all around the world. So we have, you know, if people come to our group, we can help them. If they're not native speakers of English, we can connect them with the German group, right? Or a Latin America group. So we can get them in their own native language speaking support groups, which is helpful. There's also gadolinium toxicity.com, and that's was Sharon Williams and Hubs Gribbs, and they weren't early on people. So when the FDA met, there was a whole group of people that went to an FDA meeting in 2017 and really advocated for patients. And that was when the FDA said, well, we need to look into this a little bit more. And they put a box warning on the gadolinium and then also asked that all the medication guides be updated. And the verbiage was updated to say that you should get a medication guide, but you don't always. And people now, we see all kinds of forms. There's not a standardized form, but people see the form and it says on the form, you know, we're going to use gadolinium, or we're going to use a contrast dye. And really, there's not a whole lot of effects to it, but please acknowledge it when you sign the form, right? It's not sufficient enough. And even Dr. Taldano in the FDA meeting said, you know, a patient injured is a patient injured, and we're the people who are supposed to be protecting these people. It's not enough. And I would say patients agree with that because we see lots of people every month say, no, I wasn't afforded, you know, an opportunity to talk about what this contrast was or that it's retained or whatever. So we have some gaps, but they're working hard at it. They came out with a thing called SAGE, which is symptom after gadolinium injection, that's not the right term, but it is SAGE. And they came out and they said, you know, we're going to look at some of these things. And I think they are. I think they're looking at it. And so We learn as we go.
And what is the name of your Facebook group again?
Facebook group is MRI, gadolinium contrast safety, side effects, and toxicity research.
Okay, so that is a mouthful. So you guys listen to that and write that down right now so you don't forget that. But there'll be a link in the show notes on myrcdetox.com as well.
Yeah.
And so tell us what type of scans, when people are injured or going to the hospital, what type of scans do people need to be wary about where they could be injected with a gadolinium contrasting agent?
It's going to vary. It's going to vary by the doctor and their education and their knowledge. Some doctors are happy to just inject gadolinium for everything, and other doctors have learned and are picking up on what's going on, and they're really using it less frequently. But we see it for brain scans. We see it. There's a huge increase in mammography. So breast exams, they're injecting a lot more gadolinium, and we're always saying it's not necessary. The research shows, and we give people links to the research paper that say, you know, it's not really going to make a difference or whatever, but you do have dense breast tissue, so it's easier for them to see. So if they don't use the gadolinium, they fear that they're going to not pick up on something that they would see otherwise. But overall, research tells us that it's not that helpful compared to some of the end results for the toxicity.
What type of scans don't use gadolinium and which ones do?
Well, I don't think doctors are using gadolinium for knees and hips and bone kind of things, right? Joints. I don't think they're using it for that anymore. They're still using it very much for the brain because they want to see and they don't want to miss anything in the brain because that can be problematic. Even the neurologist who did my chelation therapy, she gets gadolinium a couple times a year. She does a lot of detoxing and taking care of herself. And she just shared a juice recipe with us and we put it out in the group. But I just encourage people to read the medication guide and just really think hard. I think that small organs, like I had it for, mine was pancreatitis, and the pancreas is a small organ. It's hidden behind the stomach. You know, it's hard to get to, hard to see. So you could make a case why the doctors would want to see it. And I think the endocrinology community is still using it, right? Because it makes their jobs easier.
Yeah. And then you mentioned that they use it for MRIs, but not for CAT scans typically.
Yeah. CAT scans, typically we have people join our group and they'll say, I'm having a CT scan. And we typically tell them that would be an iodine-based product probably, which is different in the sense that the body knows what to do with salt products. You know, iodine's a salt, and it kind of knows what to do, right? It doesn't see it as a foreigner. I think the thing with gadolinium is the body sees it as a foreigner, then it sends out its macrophages and its T-cell killers and everything to like grab it and move it and get it out of there or encapsulate it. And we see after people have MRIs with contrast, we see that they're like, well, I have this new imaging and this is showing up or whatever. I have a stone, an oxalate stone where I've never had stones or whatever. So it seems like the gadolinium likes to go to where there's been previous injuries. So you see in the group, you'll see people say, well, I had a knee injury, but now my knee's worse after I had gadolinium, but I already fixed my knee. Why is my knee hurting? Or why do I all of a sudden have frozen shoulder? And why, And I got frozen shoulder, and it did take about a year, and they had to go in and break up the oxalate and vacuum it out. So is that gadolinium? Is it associated with gadolinium? There's no way to prove that.
Your body will form oxalates around heavy metals. It's kind of one of the mechanisms.
Yeah, it encapsulates it.
Yes, it's one of the mechanisms trying to deal with the heavy metals. Right. So yeah, oxalates or, you know, oxalate crystals in your tissues, hardening, calcifications of your tissues, is a sign of metal toxicity, kidney stones as well.
Right. And I think, you know, Dr. Brent Wagner out of the University of New Mexico just last year, I think I get my years confused because they're going by so fast these days, but it was in 2022 or 2023 that University of New Mexico and Dr. Brent Wagner's team found that they can actually see gadolinium nanoparticles in the kidneys. And that's concerning because they believe that that sets off disease, right? So they very much do believe that it's problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy that the very thing you're trying to do is to figure out what to do with your health ends up causing a whole host of health issues for some people. And do you know why some people have problems and others don't? Is there any kind of discernment their...
They haven't really been able to. There is like Dr. Richard Samalka. He's like the head guy in chelation. He's been really instrumental. He was a radiologist, and now he's spent his whole new career, second half of his life, focusing on gadolinium toxicity, and helped us get the disease name, gadolinium deposition disease, which isn't a formal diagnosis yet, but that's the way it's very well known. I mean, I don't know how we would ever not call it that, because it is so well known as a name, and it's an umbrella disease. There's some thought that some people, it just, your body stores it and you don't have a problem. It just goes, you know, and gets moved away on the side and gets encapsulated or whatever, and it's fine, and it, no problems. The pathways, maybe some people's pathways are open and they detox it, because you're detoxing it through your urine and your stool. So maybe some people's bodies are more. And the numbers that they're using are 1 in 10,000, but we really don't know. And the only reason I say that is because reporting is voluntary, right? And so a lot of times people aren't even aware of it. And then second, if they are aware of it, doctors might say, well, let's take a wait and see approach and see if you get better. And we'll try this and we'll try that. And then maybe we don't need to report it. So we really don't know what the true numbers are. And I know that they don't like me to say that. No one likes to hear that, but it's true. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure just genetically, you know, there's some people that have a good ability to detox, an Olympic ability to detox, and other people who don't. And those are the ones that tend to be sicker and have more severe symptoms, chronic fatigue, disability, things like that.
I think too, if you don't have a reaction right away, you might think that it was no big deal, right? But then what about 6 months later? And I don't think that we have research that shows that. I mean, I read research every single day. And I'm looking for those reports where did we follow up with the patient 1 year later, 5 years later? And what was their health symptoms then? And what new things occurred for them? Did they get autoimmune diseases? Did they get a blood cancer of some kind? I mean, and then how do we back that up and start asking questions differently, right? I just don't think we're asking the right questions at this point.
Yes. And so when you go to get a scan, what are your options? Can you request to not do a contrast scan? Can you, you know, plead with the doctor that, you know, you just don't want gadolinium or any medication or contrasting agents or dyes that contain gadolinium?
And your doctor has a right to turn down that, right? Your doctor has a right to say, well, if you won't have the gadolinium, then I don't want to see you, or, you know, we can't see what we need. And you got to think about the doctor's point of view too. I mean, we go to the doctor because we have something wrong with us. We wouldn't get an MRI machine unless we were looking for something, right? Where we have an ailment and we're trying to pinpoint it and the doctor's trying to do all the right things. If the doctor doesn't do the testing that's available to him and to us, then, and something gets missed, then there's this lawsuit happy group, right? That opens a whole new dialogue. So you kind of understand why a doctor would say, no, we really need this, right? But because they need to protect themselves as well. And they're trying to protect the patients and do all the right things. And you might want to edit this part out. I don't know, but.
No. I mean, this is really good, because I think also there can be ego involved. You know, doctors don't want to be told how to do their job. And I know, like, yes. I hear people, or even my own family, I'm like, well, just tell your doctor that this is what you want, or push them to do this, or I want this test, or I want that. The doctors are like, no, I'm the boss here.
I'm the doctor.
Yeah. Yes. So
the doctors will turn you down, or they'll say, well, I have to do it because your insurance won't pay for it unless we do it this way. You know, there's protocols with insurance companies now that kind of drive some of our healthcare decisions within the industry. I mean, we're the patient, but at the same time, insurance is laid out for certain things, and start with the x-ray, then an ultrasound, then maybe a CT, and then an MRI, or depending on what the disease is or what the ailment is that you're looking for. I mean, they have their own schedules and protocols and all of that. So it can be, but no, doctors will turn patients away if they turn down gadolinium. We hear that all the time, and patients come to our group and then they're just even more distraught. Well, my doctor says if I don't do this, then they won't see me, you know, and that's hard on a patient who wants to know. So then a lot of patients go back and have the gadolinium, and then they come back to us and they might be sicker than they were before. And they might have new and worsening symptoms. And then we just help them, you know, that's part of the support group. We just help them deal with that. We just say, well, you know, it happened. Let's get on with the next thing. You know, we can detox. We can do chelation. Here's where you go for research to find out about this. Here's where you go to research for find out about that. It has to be your choice again, but we can give you leads to find next steps, right?
And that's one reason I do this podcast and publish a lot of information on heavy metal toxicity is you don't get a lot of help with your conventional doctor or any help really typically on diagnosis or of heavy metal toxicity or what to do about it or how it's affecting your health. Most people are just totally in the dark as to what's going on with them.
We're seeing a younger group of people too, right? I mean, I'm in my 60s now, but the most heartbreaking thing for me is to see the 20 and 30 year olds coming in by the droves, you know. And the most heartbreaking stories for me are the ones where the doctors then send their patients, or they tell the parents of the patients or the caregivers of the patients, this is a psych problem. Your child, your loved one needs a psych eval. And we've had people whose families have put them in psychiatric wards for their own protections because they may be so distraught that they just want to end it all, right? This is a dark topic to talk about, but it's real. And we have patients who are like, they've just given up all hope. They feel so horrible. When you have brain pain and you have bone pain and it's day in, day out, 24/7, and no one will listen to you, no one hears you, and your doctor says you're crazy, and they label you as crazy and they gaslight you, that's a real thing happening in our world right now. And when you're gaslit, you know, you check yourself in or a family member convinces you to check in, those hospitals, they're the least trained on heavy metal poisoning. I mean, they don't have the training. And then we introduce a whole lot of new things, right? People come to us and they're like, yeah, I was put on this drug and that drug and this drug for depression and whatever, and I knew it was heavy metal poisoning. It wasn't depression. Of course I'm depressed. I have heavy metal poisoning. So the new symptoms, new side effects, new, and it just cascades.
Yeah. I mean, right? It's just chilling because I just on my own experience have friends and family members, people you know that have had bad car accidents, that have had tons of scans, tons of imaging, or they have chronic pain, or they've had tons of imaging, you know, looking back at that, you know, I could see where they would have gadolinium toxicity from all those scans and these correlate symptoms.
Well, and it's not only that it retains, but it accumulates, right? So it's retained in the first one, then you go back and you get a second, a third, a fourth. I mean, we have people, sometimes I'm amazed, people come into the group and they're like, I've had 15 MRIs with contrast, you know, 15. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot, you know? And so the way we test, I know that I think you test with hair. So hair and urine. And so our group believes that urine is the best way to test. And the reason that we suggest urine testing is because it shows how much the body's excreting at any given point. It's only that test is only good to show that you do have toxic levels and your body is excreting it, right? And so we use urine for that as the baseline. It's really not good for anything else. That test's not really good for anything else. And then you have people who come to the group and they're sick and it's been 2-3 years since they had an injection and they're just connecting dots and they're just curious and they're wondering. And they may do a urine report and then numbers may come back within levels, but they still feel horrible. What we would say to those patients is, because you can provoke it, you can put a provoking agent like DPA or EDTA or whatever and provoke the gadolinium, which will stir it up, and then it will show more in the urine, right? And it'll go up. My number went from 8.4 to 99. When they provoked it, right?
Yeah, and then so you get all those symptoms because you've poked the bear.
Yeah,
and you've got the bear. All those symptoms happening. Because with hair mineral analysis, we don't test for gadolinium. There's no hair mineral analysis lab I know of that's testing hair for gadolinium. So you would have to do urine.
Yeah, and there is a test, I think, for hair. Only reason I know that is because I participated in a kidney study at the University of New Mexico, and they tested hair, and it did show in the hair. You know, it showed interesting gadolinium showed in the hair, in the fingernails, everything that they tested, it shows there.
Do you know what lab that is?
I don't know the name of the lab, and it's one that the university there uses. So, you know, it's very different. And biopsies, we see it in biopsies. We see it in autopsy reports. I mean, I've read lots of autopsy reports, and it's in every organ that they test in the autopsies, right? So we know it's retained, and we don't even encourage people anymore to really do biopsies for just to prove gadolinium, because it's an invasive test. They're cutting you open. They're testing, you know, they're grabbing. It's an invasive test, which always opens the door to introduce new things, right? So we just tell people, if you've been injected with gadolinium, you're retaining some. Whether or not you have a lot of symptoms and a lot of problems, that's to be determined. But
yeah, and that's going to just contribute to your toxic load, which you already have with lead, mercury, and arsenic, aluminum, and all the other ones. Also, with Chuck Norris's wife, she was gadolinium poisoned and had years of debilitation. And he's been very outspoken with advocacy about warning people about gadolinium. He lives just right down the road from my mom in Texas. And so I thought that was really, really interesting. But yeah, I think people that they're not aware about this and how ill it can make one. And there's really no recourse. Like there's just almost nowhere to go to address this.
And you don't want to be naysayers and down Debbie Downers like that. You know, that's my nickname, but not really. But yeah, it's huge. And unfortunately, it is so life impacting. For me, it was, I had an NDE. I met God. He sent me back here. I begged him not to send me back here, but he did. And he said, listen to my whispers. You have the opportunity to help many. So that's the course I've been on, right? And that's when this whole thing started for me to like really get involved and really do the research. And I've spent, you know, thousands of hours reading research. I went and took the MRI safety course that the radiologists and technologies take, and was very kind of them to invite me and allow me. And we did a Q&A, and there was a lot of people in the who were studying for the test, and they didn't, you know, the MRI safety course. And it was sometimes the first time they'd ever met a patient, you know, and we did Q&A and all that. And so, yeah, it's a bigger deal. And they want to say it's not, but when you're getting 300 people a month, every month coming to your group.
Yeah, it's a problem. And that's just one group. There's dozens of groups. And I think people just don't, like you mentioned, they go to the doctor, they have all these symptoms, they just get a psych eval. They get a card for a psychiatrist, especially with pain. I mean, it's very difficult for any type of pain to have that managed properly, much less figure out the underlying root cause of it. You know,
well, and I think too, like pain medication doesn't typically work, you know, I don't want to name brands, but there's a lot of medicines that patients in the group have taken, and they will tell you that never touched my pain level. That medication never touched my pain levels. And so when your doctor's throwing pain meds at you and it's not touching anything, and you're telling your doctor it's not working, it's not helpful, it's not touching my pain, something else is wrong, we have to look somewhere else. And we get stuck on, well, you're here for your pancreatitis. And we're so focused on pancreatitis that we forget to look at the bigger picture.
And what in your experience has helped patients with detoxification of gadolinium? What are some of the alternatives, the things they can do if they suspect they have gadolinium?
I think the first thing we tell people is get a urine report, and then you know your levels, and you'll see that it's there. Take, you know, documentation to your doctor, who may not believe you. Show your doctor, you know, here's a report. Here's what this research shows, so that you can begin to open the dialogue, right? Open the dialogue. And then we do chelation. DDPA chelation is still the number one thing because it pulls so much and it can be harsh. There's a nonprofit called GADTRAC.org. GADTRAC.org. GADTTRAC.org. And it's a nonprofit. It was started by Dr. Salmalka, who's the chelation expert in the United States. And he's put his career on hold as a radiologist to help the community. So chelation is still number one. It's the preferred. The thing you want to do with chelation, and what not all doctors who do chelation understand, is you do want to track the liver function and the kidney functions, you know, do the GFR testing and all those so that you're monitoring it. And then listen to your patients, what's their new symptoms, and help them get nutrients. So you do detoxing, you understand that you can't just pull out the foreigner that the body doesn't recognize. You have to also support the body and give it nutrients it needs that we're not getting in the foods, the macro, the micronutrients, put those back in so that the body has something to feel supported and then can build new healthy cells to go on. So chelation, detoxing, I don't encourage people to get on the supplement train, because you start throwing new supplements and your body's not detoxing properly, you're just building a dam, right? It's like you're building a dam and it's just backing up. So you want to work with somebody who's a professional that knows how to do detoxing. You know, we always encourage people, work with a doctor, work with a medical professional, work with someone who's trained in detoxing and understands heavy metals. It's not something to do on your own, really.
Yeah, especially if you're ill. It's just not, it's not a DIY project for sure.
Yeah, it's not a DIY. And you can spend hundreds of dollars on supplements and then you go down a pathway and you don't even know what supplements you're taking or what supplement does what and how it interacts with that. And then you may be on medications and how it interacts with that. It's complex. Healthcare is complex. We have to admit that.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And then I also imagine that I love bioenergetics and like Spooky 2 Rife. And definitely has some programs in there that can help with gadolinium. They have programs for every different heavy metal. Unquestioning, they have programs for gadolinium as well. And I'd encourage people to explore that. Spooky2.com, I think, holds a lot of promise for facilitating the body's ability to detox just in general. But also helping with the immune system calming down, with the overreaction that we find with the immune system, with gadolinium, and helping to remove the gadolinium as well. I think it's a lot more simple.
And I think niacin detox sauna is a big one, infrared sauna, and they use niacin. You know, our skin is our largest external organ. And so sweating is good, right? So infrared sauna helps you sweat. The niacin just brings it to the surface. And there's a couple programs and I can share those with you, but they've really worked hard and they've studied what, you know, and they've added the silica and all of that to their protocols to help facilitate excreting it out of the body. So we tell people infrared sauna, HBOT, hyperbaric oxygen, that's huge, right? We suggest a book called Breathe. We tell people you got to learn how to breathe again, because we don't, as humans, we're not breathing properly. So breathing, the deep breathing, that's huge. Acupuncture, all those things, right? Diet, exercise. And we tell people, I know you don't feel like it, but just go for a 10-minute walk. Just walk around the block. Walk to your mailbox, you know, because we have people who are like, I can't get out of bed. We're like, no, you have to get up and move. Get up and move. Walk to the mailbox. Walk to your neighbor's house, whatever, because that's important. That helps with grounding, right? So those are all helpful things.
Yes. Yeah. And it must be, I mean, incredibly difficult for people to be motivated to do anything if they're chronically fatigued in a tremendous amount of pain. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, can you tell us some of the few things that you've learned working with all these people?
These patients?
Yeah.
Well, I think what I learned is that we want to trust, everyone wants to trust their doctors, and we have a responsibility to really be very direct with what our symptoms are and why we're there and what we're looking for. We have to own that. But we see patients with all kinds of things and they just keep going back, you know, and it's like, well, why would you go back if that's what's poisoning you? Why do you keep going back to the same well? Maybe try something new, try something different. What's your diet like, you know? Parasites love sugar, right? So metals love sugar. So there's that interaction between parasites and the metal and our gut. And so what's your gut health like? Are you keeping a mood, food, poop, pain journal? And what does that look like? It doesn't have to be something complex, but just simple that you're making tick marks or you're putting a number next to it and you're monitoring it. So you're looking for trends, you know? Oh, every time I eat oatmeal, I flare. Well, maybe, you know, maybe grains aren't your thing right now because of the heavy metals. Maybe it's interacting with the heavy metals and you have more sensitivities. So you can start to reduce some of your symptoms by doing that charting and starting to understand that it's all connected and it all matters and you have to treat it holistically. And then mindset's huge, right? Mindset is huge. So if you pray, pray, if you meditate, meditate, you know, whatever gets you grounded and spiritually meeting whatever your spiritual needs are, that's an important part of this. So it's not just physical, it's physical, mental, spiritual, holistic. And we just can't teach that enough because when you're in pain, you're just so focused on the pain that you can't look at the bigger picture. And I just encourage patients, look at the bigger picture, look at it, come up above it and look down and say, what is all this? And try to dissect it and really understand, get in touch with your own body. Because I think a lot of us aren't until something happens to you. Then you're like, oh my gosh, I got to figure this out.
Yeah, yeah. And so tell us some of the stories of patients that you've dealt with that are in your group, just to kind of illustrate what they go through.
We do have a book coming out called Gadolinium Deposition and Toxicity, A Life-Changing Event. There's about 25 people in the book, and we're really just patients who are documenting our stories from the beginning to where we are today when we're publishing this book. And it's really good because I think it humanizes it, right? It humanizes the experience. So, but some of the things, I mean, to be honest, when you inject a baby with gadolinium, we have a lot of babies. I mean, we have several baby stories, right? Where we've lost children. And it's always comorbidities. We can't just say it's gadolinium because they have comorbidities. We all do, or we wouldn't have gotten injected. So, but how do those feed? So we've lost children. And that's always a real sad one. The younger people, you know, we've had people, their families have put them in, like I mentioned, mental hospitals and psych wards to like figure it out because they're suicidal. They're not sleeping. When I first joined, it was kind of funny. I joined and there was only 1,200 people in the group at the time. And there was a whole group of us who didn't sleep. We slept less than 3 hours a day for a year. And so what do you do when you can't sleep? Well, you get on Facebook, you get on social media, you text people, you whatever, and you form this community who are up in the middle of the night all night long because they're pacing the floor and they can't sleep. And so they're talking to each other. They're reading research papers. They're sharing stories. They're like, well, what helps you? What doesn't help you? What do you do? Da, 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 right? So there's that. And the patient groups, we see lots of different types of people come into the group. Some people are so sick that they just want to know they're not alone. Other people come to the group and they're really motivated. They want this gadolinium chapter behind them. They're going to figure it out. They're going to do whatever it takes. And they're on. They're closing their chapter and on with their life. And that may mean that they do a sprint of chelation and then they're on and they're gone. And that's hard on the group because when people get well and leave the group and it only leaves the sick people in the room, then people are like, do we have any success stories here? And you're like, yeah, we do. And we need to be better at capturing those success stories so that people gives people hope, right? And that's really what we hope to do is give people hope throughout this. So then I think the other part of the group is they're too sick to do anything. So they're just monitoring the group and they're talking to people. Then the motivated ones. And then there's the long-termers like me. I'm 6 years in and I've read thousands of hours of research papers. And, you know, I talk to people every day. I have people call 24/7. My husband calls them, is this a GAD adverse event? You know, because I get phone calls and I get text messages and stuff. And people want to get on with their life, but they can't. And we do some polls. We do informal polls in the group. Just let me give you some ideas really quick. Some of the polls that we've done, like informed consent, 91% of the people said they never got any informed consent before they got injected with gadolinium. 54% of people that we polled said that they had new and worsening symptoms after being injected with gadolinium. 53%, and I found this one really interesting, and we know these are informal, unscientific polls, right? They're just polls of patients to bring community together. But 53% said they never were on a single medication when they got injected. But now that they've been injected, they're on a lot of medications. So there's that. 88% say they struggle with pain. 88%, that's huge, right? Bone pain, burning pain, all kinds of pain, whether it's skin or And when you can't sleep, a last of times it can be mast cell related, but even the touch of clothing or sheets on your legs or whatever cause so much pain that you just want to avoid it. You don't want to go to bed, because when you get in bed and you pull the sheets up, your whole body lights on fire. So why would you go to bed, right? You just, we encourage people to buy the gravity chairs, gravity-free chairs, because it takes the weight off of the joints. So people find comfort in sleeping in gravity chairs. That works. And then 54% said they have thyroid issues now. They didn't have thyroid issues before they got gadolinium. So there's a lot of informal polls that we do. And really, it's just to help people feel connected and not alone in the groups.
Great. Yeah. And so the group, again, is the MRI Gadolinium Contrast Safety, Side Effects, and Toxicity Research, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And it's in... It's interesting that group has grown so much, but a few months ago, I had started a new drug or was looking at starting a drug, which I don't. I just do. I'm doing palliative care at this point in my life, so I'm not treating anything. My last MRI came back. There was something wrong with every single organ. There was a mass, a blockage, scarring, something, right? So I get all these new labels and diagnoses. I just add them to the list and go on with life. But I do think it was interesting because my doctor had said, well, why don't you try this? You know, it's an old drug. Now you don't even have to have a prescription for it, blah, blah, blah. It really helps with cancer, da, 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 da. And I'd like you to just look at it. So I went to that group and I started asking questions in that group. It's a group that has over 100,000 people in it. And within 3 days, over 100 people jumped out of that group and came to the gadolinium group because they're like, I think some of my problems are not my cancer, but they're my gadolinium poisoning, you know? And so then they start to connect the dots. But when you see over 100 people or right at 100 people jump from one group into another group in 3 days, you're like, you know, come on, you got to do a better job of connecting the dots.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for coming on the show and imparting your knowledge. And just, you know, with this show, I'm just trying to, you know, help people get to the underlying root causes of their symptoms, connect those dots, get those pieces of the puzzle so they can feel better. That's really, you know, why I'm doing this show. So I wanted to thank you for your work and
thank
what
you
you're
for
doing.
Having me.
Yeah.
Yes.
What you're doing to do the same thing to help people in pain and find solutions. You know, if you suspect gadolinium poisoning and any of this resonates with you, join the group that Debbie's an admin on, her Facebook group. Any other websites or other places we can find you?
Living with Gadolinium is a Facebook page. Living with Gadolinium LLC, it's a Facebook page. And it's just really about research, put it out there. So you can type in the keywords like brain or mammogram or whatever and it'll bring up research papers. And it was really because there was no research that I could find. And a lot of research is being moved behind paywalls now. So you have a hard time accessing it and finding it.
And where can people find your book?
It'll be on Amazon when it comes out. And we're figuring probably May timeframe sometime. It's in the final edits right now. So yeah, and there's the stories, you know, we just want to raise awareness, humanize it. It's about humanizing and making connections and connecting the dots. So yeah, we appreciate that. And all the money that comes from that book is going back direct to help patients. There's nobody making money off the book. We're putting all the money back to research, either University of New Mexico or GadTrack.org, which is the nonprofit, or somewhere where it helps GAD patients.
Okay, fantastic. That's great news. So everyone go check out Debbie's book on Amazon.com when that comes out at some point, hopefully this year, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
for
great.
Sure.
Yeah, well, everyone, thanks so much for joining us for the Myers Detox Podcast. I'm Dr. Wendy Myers, and just love doing this show every week. I've been wanting to have someone on to talk about gadolinium toxicity for so long, for so many years. So really thrilled that Debbie reached out to do this show. So I hope that for some of you, it really helps to connect the dots for some of your symptoms and what you're struggling with in your life. So thanks for tuning in.
The Myers Detox Podcast is created and hosted by Wendy Myers. This podcast is for information purposes only. Statements and views expressed on this podcast are not medical advice. This podcast, including Wendy Myers and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. Individuals on this podcast may have direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. If you think you have a medical problem, consult a licensed physician. Thank you.